Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, I don't remember exactly where we left off, but we are going to pick up, because I'm pretty sure this is where we left off. Yeah, it's verse 23. We started at verse 23. Okay, excuse me. Okay, let's pick up with verse 23. Again, what we're doing here is the story. Let's just do a little, since it's been a couple of weeks since we had a chance to get together. We are working through the story of Sodom. The two parts of this story, part number one is Hashem's inner decision to tell Abraham about the destruction of Sodom. Hashem has made a decision, and as we discussed theologically speaking, if God makes a decision to destroy Sodom, it is the right decision. That's just our starting point. That's God made that decision, it's right. Yet he has this inner dialogue of telling Abraham, because Abraham is going to be this great and mighty nation, and other nations are going to bless themselves through him, and he will teach his children to walk in the ways of justice and righteousness and kindness and charity, you know, the things that we saw in the pasuk. And therefore God decides to tell Abraham about it. And now we're going to move into the second part of the story, which is, what does Abraham then do with the information? How does he attempt to intercede on behalf of the people? The way Rashi learned, we went through the text. Now we started going through Rashi. Today we're going to finish up Rashi and Mitzvah, and I photocopied it in case you have a chance. We'll start the Ramban, although we'll see how things go. What we learned with what we saw in Rashi, when Rashi discussed the issue of Hashem's decision in order to tell Abraham, because Abraham is so great. So Rashi used the language of, it is unbecoming of me not to tell him, because they are Abraham's children. Abraham became the father of all the nations. This is going to be in his land. How can I destroy the children without at least letting the father know? That's how Rashi understood Hashem's argument, because I cherish him, because I love him, because he's going to teach his children to walk in my way. So because I love him, he knows me, he is their father, so to speak, it's on his land. How can I destroy all of these cities without letting him know? Okay, let's take a look at now what we did is verse 23. Vayigash Avraham. This is the last thing that we did. Avraham came forward. Rashi commented on page 188, if you'll flip your books, little booklet that you have, to page 188 on the top. We are in the middle there of the middle section, verse 23, and Avraham came forward. So the way the Torah introduces Avraham's, now we're in, again, section 2 of Avraham's response, it introduces it with the word of Vayigash Avraham. Avraham came forward, which is an interesting word. It's a strong word of Avraham approaching Hashem. And Rashi pointed out for us, which we saw 2 weeks ago, there are actually three meanings of the word Vayigash. We'll read it again inside the Rashi. We find a coming forward when it comes to war. That was one of the terms in which we find in Tanakh the usage of the word Vayigash, and he approached in order to fight, to battle. We find Hagasha Lepius for conciliation. That was Yehuda trying to have a conciliation with his brother Yosef, who was the viceroy of Egypt, although Yehuda, of course, did not know that at the time. But he came forward in a strong way in attempt to have a conciliatory type meeting in order to allow the brothers to return back to Egypt, to the land of Canaan, excuse me. And we find, thirdly, Rashi points out from Eliyahu Hanavi, from Elijah the prophet, who came forward in prayer. And those are the three elements Rashi comments that Avraham is encompassing on Vayigash. As Avraham comes forward, he comes forward with ready to do battle. These are his children. They're about to be destroyed. He comes with conciliation. Maybe we can work something out. And he comes with prayer in terms of trying to salvage the people. Now let's take a look at the words that he uses. That's the introduction that we are given.
Excuse me, Rabbi.
Yes.
This is in the front of the Siddur. I just read it last Shabbos.
That's correct.
I happened to...
Rabbi Saul Berman. That's right, Rabbi Saul Berman.
Rabbi Soloveitchik.
Who...
The book of it. Oh, in each instance, they were asking for justice.
Rabbi Saul Berman wrote the introduction to the Art Scroll Siddur, the English version. And in his introduction to prayer, the entire introduction was based on this Rashi, basically, that there are three forms of prayer, and you just read that. That's very good. That's correct.
Trying.
Very good. Very good. Okay, let's take a look at the verse first. Verse 23. Let's go back on top. Verse 23. Vayigash Avraham Vayomar. And Avraham came forward and said, now there's this argument of Avraham is going to be a two-part argument, meaning two verses. Let's take a look and break it down, and then we'll see how Rashi addresses it. Ha'af tispet tzadikim rasho, will you even obliterate righteous with the wicked? To flip your page over. So, number one, Avraham says a question. Will you obliterate even the righteous together with the wicked? Perhaps there are 50 righteous people in the midst of the city. Would you even obliterate and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous people that are within it? Verse 2. Third verse. Now again, Avram, of course, isn't speaking with verses. That's just how the Torah breaks it down. Avram is one long speech. Third part. It would be sacrilege to you to do such a thing, to bring death upon righteous with wicked. So the righteous will be like the wicked. It would be sacrilege to you, shall the judge of all earth not do justice. Now there's a lot here. Three complete verses, many different arguments. Let's break it down. Let's start. What's this first phrase? Will you even obliterate righteous with the wicked? What does that sound like? What's that type of argument?
The good with the bad.
Right? Would it be appropriate for you to swallow up the righteous together with the wicked? Fine. Good argument. What would it sound like God was ready to do that Avram is arguing against at this point? Sound like God was ready to destroy everything in the city. Yeah. Right? And to that, Avram is responding.
Maybe it's 50.
How could you do that? Right? Maybe there are righteous in there. Right? He hasn't put a number. That's a good point. Let's note that. There was no number there, just that. It doesn't make sense. It's philosophically wrong that you should destroy righteous together with wicked. So it would be an assumption that there must be some righteous in there. How can you do that? Now there's a nuanced difference as we go to his next argument. There's a change here. Take a look again at the next verse, verse 24. Now he puts a number to it. Again, the opening line had no number. Just it doesn't make sense. How could you destroy righteous together with wicked? Now he puts a number to it. Perhaps there are 50 righteous people in the midst of the city. Now listen to his argument. Would you even obliterate and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous people that are within it? What's he arguing for?
To leave part of the town that the good people are in.
Read those words carefully.
Assuming that you would not obliterate the righteous, obliterate the wicked, why not save everybody?
Excellent, right?
Save the righteous.
This is a new argument he's now making. His opening argument is you can't destroy righteous together with wicked. How many righteous were there? He doesn't say. Just... you can't destroy that one person with everybody. Why should he get swept up with everybody else? Now he puts a number to it. And he says, maybe there are 50. Now, one of the questions we asked when we went through the text is, where did he pick the number 50 out from? So we'll address that in Rashi and the Ramban and the commentators. But maybe there are 50. And what should happen if there are 50? And everyone should be spared. This magical number of 50, wherever it came from, and we'll see in Rashi where he got it from. If there are 50, he's no longer arguing, because now he put a number to it. He's no longer arguing, why would you destroy the 50? He's now saying, spare the place on behalf of the 50. That if we can hit this magical number of 50, he's making an argument of the entire place should be spared. Now again, we noted this a number of times, I'm going to note it again. Has Avraham yet argued that the wicked should not be destroyed even though they're wicked just because?
No.
Right?
No.
There's no argument of, oh, please have mercy, have compassion, give him another chance. We have not seen that. His argument is either you can't destroy the righteous, that for sure wouldn't be right. And then he says, and if I can find 50 of them, then we should be able to spare the entire city on behalf of the 50. Which is an interesting argument. We could talk about, like, well, why should that be? Why should we not just pull out the 50 and destroy the city? But Avram is making an argument that if the city has 50, spare the whole city, which would beg the question, why? Mm-hmm. Why should the entire city of righteous, of wicked people be spared on account of the 50? But right now that's his argument. Then Avram continues, and he introduces a new phrase which he uses twice in verse 25. It would be sacrilege, chalila, chulin, profane, mundane. It would be wrong for you to do such a thing. To do what? To bring death upon righteous with wicked, so the righteous will be like the wicked. What argument is this?
Well, that's sort of like the first argument.
Exactly. This sounds like he's going back to the first. And as he starts off with an argument of how could you destroy righteous together with wicked? Then he introduces a number. Maybe there'll be 50. And if we can hit that magic number 50, then we should spare the entirety of the city. And then he goes back to the sacrilegious element of just simply destroying righteous together with the wicked. That the righteous should be treated like the wicked. That would be sacrilege to you. And then he like hits God, so to speak, with this, shall the judge of all earth not do justice? Right, now that's a strong, right, that's a hagasha for milchama, that's the approaching of war of, I mean, can the judge of all earth not do justice? Now which argument is that to? Is that to the argument of 50 sparing the whole city, or is that to the argument of not wiping out the righteous?
Not wiping.
Right, this is only, he doesn't say that on the middle argument of, if I can find 50, spare the whole city. That's already something else. But to say that you're going to wipe out the righteous together with the wicked, on that I can make an argument of, how can the judge of all earth not do justice? So it's a very interesting argument. It's a, Avram seems to start from, don't take out the righteous. Then he says, maybe I can even find enough to save the whole city. Then he goes back to, but if I can't, at least the righteous he can't knock out, and that would totally not be in line with your being the judge of all of the earth. So far, so good?
Yeah, I mean, it almost sounds quite addicted to Avram is making.
Right, that last argument.
Shem likes it.
Now, again, let's put in the context. We don't know what's there. All we know is that God has destroyed it God has decided to destroy the city, and Avram is making an argument. Maybe there are righteous. Now, Avram doesn't know, but God. This all might be within. In other words, right now at this point, Avraham hasn't said anything that has directly contradicted God's decision. God's decision is correct. It's right. Avraham hasn't said anything because he doesn't know the facts. He's just arguing, maybe there is a righteous person there. You can't destroy him. So God's saying, all right, that's true, but guess what? There isn't. But Avraham's argument is, maybe there's a righteous person there. He must be spared, and maybe there are enough of them to spare the whole city. So in theory, what we are clearly getting are two major points. Number one is, it would be absolutely sacrilege, it would be antithetical to God's system of justice, that a righteous person should be swept up together with the wicked person. Which we're going to put on the shelf, because we are going to find at times, not only throughout Jewish history, but in the Chumash itself, where that happens. So we're going to have to address that question, because Avram is making an argument of chalila, it would be sacrilege for you to destroy the righteous and treat a righteous person the same way as a wicked person. You, the judge of all of the earth. He says it strongly. Put that on the shelf. That's statement number one. Parenthetically, we're going to find places, not just, forget about Jewish history. Forget the Holocaust, the pogroms, the Inquisitions, where we can say, I don't understand, he looked like a righteous person. In the Chumash, we're going to find examples where there's this just cross-the-board destruction. So we have to work on that. But putting that on the shelf, argument number one, Avram says, is you can't destroy righteous together with wicked. You can't treat them the same. And argument number two is, there's a certain point when there are enough righteous not only to spare themselves, but to spare their entire city as well. So there's two arguments. Righteous alone, and then there's the point. What's the point that Avram hits? 50. Somehow that's the magic number that will not only spare themselves, but the people also. Okay, so far so good. Let's take a look at Rashi. Let's take a look. So flip back a page again to page 188 on the bottom of the middle section there. Will you even obliterate? So this is the phrase, will you even obliterate the righteous together with the wicked? Says Rashi, everyone see where I am? Mm-hmm. Will you even obliterate? This means, will you also obliterate? Meaning Rashi's addressing the language of Ha'af.
Oh.
Meaning will you also obliterate? But according to the translation of Unculus, who rendered the word Ha'af as meaning anger, then its explanation is as follows, flipping to the top of page 189. Will your anger steer you that you would obliterate righteous with wicked? So Rashi gives two explanations. Let's just outside. Number one, the simple meaning of Avram is simply saying, are you also going to knock out righteous together with wicked? Unculus, who wrote the Aramaic translation of the Chumash, adds, the word ha'af is a language of anger. Will you allow your anger to force that destruction onto even, right, which is an interesting take on it. It's not just, it's not coming out of nowhere, but that there'd be such a concept. Again, whenever we talk about any attribute of God, we always do so with the introduction of, we really don't know what we're talking about, nor do we know what it means when we attribute certain elements to God. But some concept of God's anger, whatever that would mean, would it therefore cause that tidal wave, that sweeping punishment that would get you right? And Avram's saying, how can you do that? How can you allow that anger to sweep up the righteous together with the wicked? Okay, that was argument number one. That was pretty straightforward. How could you do that? Then Avram went to argument number two, which was, not only should the righteous be spared, but the righteous should take the wicked along with them in being spared. Says Rashi in verse 24, perhaps, ulai, there are 50 righteous people. Why 50? Says Rashi. Now this is going to be a major dispute amongst the commentators. Asara tzaddikim, 10 righteous people, lekol krach ukrach, for each city. For there are 5 places. Now, the Chumash did not delineate 5 cities here. The Chumash delineates 2, Sodom and Amorah, Sodom and Gomorrah. So you say, where did 50 come from? So Rashi, I don't know 50. So Rashi says, really, there weren't just 2. There were actually 5 cities that were part of this major metropolis, as we'll see Rashi will say in a moment. The metropolis was known as the city of Sodom, but it was really 5 separate cities, and you would need 10 righteous for each city. 10 is a number we can deal with. A magic number of 10? Nah, that doesn't bother me. 50, I'd ask, I don't know, where's 50 from? How many places do we have the number 50? That would say, like, why is 50 such a magic number? But Rashi says, it's really not 50, it's really a magic number of 10. 10 we get. 10 is a minion. 10 has all sorts of connotations throughout. Chumash, fine. So I have the number 10 would be sufficient to spare a city. So says Rashi, what Avram is arguing is there are 5 little cities. Maybe each city will have a 10. Each city will have a minion of tzaddikim. If you have a minion of tzaddikim, we could spare the entire city. Now Rashi has not yet addressed why. Why does having a minion of tzaddikim not only spare the tzaddikim themselves, but take the whole city up with them? Rashi does not comment yet on that. And if you'll say that the merit of the righteous will not save the wicked, then why should you put the righteous to death? Meaning, this is Rashi's addressing is the back and forth argument of Rashi, of Avram. First he says, you can't wipe out the righteous, that's not right. Then he says, maybe I have 10 righteous per city for a total of 50, and somehow the merit of 10 righteous will save the entire city, just in their merit. And if you'll say, you won't allow that to happen, then Avram goes back and says, but at least you can't destroy the righteous themselves. And that's how Rashi understands the weaving nature of Avraham's argument. And why is it sacrilege to God to destroy the righteous together with the wicked? It is profane for you, continues Rashi in the next verse. People will say, such is his craft. That is the way that God works. Shotef hakol, he washes away everything, righteous together with the wicked. so did you do Lidor Hamabul to the generation of the flood, so did you do to the generation of the Haflag of the Tower of Bavel, the generation of the disunion. Look, that's the nature of God, Abraham argues to Hashem. People are going to say, you just like wipe them all away. Now, we find often in Chumash that the tzaddikim, the leaders of our people, have made arguments to Hashem of what will they say? An argument of, we know on the inside how things work. We know that we were deserving of this. We know that we brought it upon ourselves. But God, you can't do that to us, because what are they going to say? And how can we allow your name to be profaned? So even though we are deserving of punishment, spare us, not because we deserve it, but because if you do to us what we deserve, how will that look to everybody else? And it's an argument that works. Moshe makes this argument several times throughout Chumash, and in effect, he's paralleling himself, he's modeling himself after Avram here in Sodom, where you have one of our earliest intercedings of a tzaddik on behalf of others, as Moshe does for the Jewish people many times. This is Avram on behalf of non-Jews, the people of Sodom, who were wicked. And Avram's argument is, how can you destroy the righteous together with the wicked? People will say that that's what you do. You just, the brush of your hands, you know, wash them all away. Now again, Avram is not making any argument here that's contradicting anything that Hashem has already decided to do. His whole argument is, maybe there are righteous people there and then you couldn't do this. Because all that he knows is that God has decided to destroy the place. And he's saying, but maybe they're righteous there. To which Hashem's going to respond, maybe, but I know that there's not. But his argument is maybe, and if there is, then A, if I can get a minion of them, their merit should spare the whole town. And if I can't get a minion, at least you have to spare them, because people will otherwise say that your mida, your trait, your behavior is just to wash everybody away altogether. That is Avraham's arguments. Okay, so far so good? Mm-hmm. Good. It's a powerful argument. So again, we can break it down just for our sakes into those two parts. Just the righteous and then actually sparing everybody. What is Hashem's response to Avraham's argument? On the top of page 190, let's read the verse itself in verse 26. Yomer Hashem, Hashem responds, Im emtza b'som chamishim tzadikim b'socha ir, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous people in the midst of the city, v'nosasi l'chol hamakom ba'avuram, I would then spare the entire place on their account. So what does Hashem respond to? Which of Abram's argument?
The first.
Right? That middle argument of
find the 50.
If we find that 50, then not only, which is, again, he's responding to the bigger request, not only will I spare the righteous themselves, but if I find those 50, yes, indeed, I will then spare the entire place on their account. Take a look at Rashi, verse 26. Down below, if I find in Sodom, then I would spare the entire place. I would spare all of the cities, not only Sodom. Since Sodom was a metropolis, and the most eminent of them all, the verse made the whole area dependent upon it, meaning it mentions it alone when referring to the 50 righteous people. Rashi is making sure that we don't get confused why. Again, let me just point out what Rashi is doing here. If you were just a reader of the Chumash, and you came across the number 50, you'd be perplexed as to, like, what's its significance? How many cities have been mentioned? Only two. Sodom and Amorah. 50 people. 25. I don't know what you would do with the number 50. Mm-hmm. And then Hashem's response to Avram is, if I find 50 people in the middle of the city of Sodom, he only mentions one, mm-hmm. I'll spare the whole place. You'd be a little bit confused as you're trying to read through this. Mm-hmm. First you mentioned two, I'm going to destroy Sodom and Amorah. Let me just actually, let's double check that. I think that's what right, he did say both. Hashem referred to both, Sodom and Amorah. Avram asks for 50, and Hashem says, if I find 50 in Sodom, I won't destroy it. So the Bible critic of sorts would try to figure out, like, what are we talking about here? We went from two cities, 50 people, to Sodom. Mm-hmm. So Rashi points out, no, what's really going on here is, There are five cities. The number 50 isn't a magical number. It's really a minion per city. So then you'd read, well, then why is Hashem only talking about finding 50 righteous people in the city of Sodom? So Rashi says, don't be confused. Sodom was a metropolis. That was a major city. So we refer to the general area as Sodom, but it really refers to the five cities that all went together there. Of all this. Fine.
Sort of like Atlantis.
And all of its surrounding suburbs, right? Separate cities in the area. We have many, many places in the world like that, and that's what simply Rashi is saying. Now, the fact that in verse 27, let's continue on, Avram is going to respond and move his number down. What's not stated, but what obviously must have happened is, we didn't find the 50. Because had we found the 50, then the deal would be done. Avram made his request for 50. Why did he start from 50? Because he had five cities. He wanted a minion in each place. That's as low as he wanted to start. Hashem agrees. So if there would have been 50 righteous people, 10 per city, conversation would have been over, everybody would have gone home, and the fire of brimstone never would have fallen. But Avram continues, which means that obviously, what did we not find? We didn't find 50. Well, what did we find? So Avram continues. What does he move down to? Says verse 27, Avram responded and said, behold, now I have begun to speak to my Lord, although I am but dust and ash. Now, one of the things we paid attention to is each one of the conversations that Avram has, how does he introduce it? Right? So the first words was Vayigash. His very first words were, he approached. He approached with prayer. He approached with ready to fight. He approached with conciliation. His second thing, he begins with his very humble words of, I have begun to speak to my Lord, although I am but dust and ash. Perhaps the 50 righteous people lack five. Would you destroy the entire city because of the five?
Can I... You know, you're saying that perhaps they looked, that Abraham looked,
so Avram is not moving from his place. It has to be that Hashem, in essence, says, I would agree, and basically informed Avraham that there are not 50 righteous people.
Right, that's what I was...
Yeah.
Okay. So he's going down.
Right, so now we're going to go through his numbers. So Avram starts at 50, and according to Rashi, what was the 50 about? 10 per city. Now he goes down to 45, which is an odd number. So what's the 45 representative of? If he went from 50 down to 45, and again, let's go over Avram's argument. Is he arguing that the 45 should be spared themselves, or that the 45 should spare a city?
Spare a city.
Spare a city. So he's gone beyond, below a minion, because he's only got 45 people, he's got not five cities, and he's still arguing, but are you going to destroy a whole city because of five people? If five people's merit, now again, really it was 50 people's merit, would have saved all of the city. So says Avram, but because of five people, you're going to destroy an entire city? And Avram, Hashem responds, you're right, I will not destroy if I find there 45. But what's with the 45? What does that number represent? Let's take a look at Rashi, verse 27. Avram's opening argument is, I am but dust and ash. I was already fit to become dust through the kings, and ash through Nimrod. What is Rashi referring to? So there have been a couple of stories. One was explicit in the Chumash, and one was only hinted at, and we learned in the Medrash. When Avraham begins his quest to find God, and he discovers him, so his father was an idolater. So the Medrash records, it's based on a hint that the Torah gives us, that Avraham smashed all of the idols of his father, and he put the hammer in the hands of one of the idols, and when his father comes in and says, who smashed up all of my idols? Why'd you do such a thing? Avram says, well, I don't know, it wasn't me, it was this idol. And his father says, that's ridiculous, idols don't do anything. So Avram says, do you hear what your mouth is saying? If you don't believe that an idol can smash another idol, why would you pray to such a thing?
So his father said, oh my God, would you do
that? His father grabs him by the ear.
Give me that joke.
His father grabs him by the ear, drags him to King Nimrod, who we discussed in this story of the Tower of Babel. King Nimrod was a major figure in the early biblical time period of Avram Avinu. And King Nimrod throws him into a fiery furnace to posit a test whether or not there really is such a God, or and he does the whole thing. And Avram miraculously survives the test of being thrown into a fiery oven, and he survives and he walks out, and there's a whole story to do with that. What Avram is referencing is, I don't really deserve to exist, to stand before you. I really should be dust, or I should say, I should have been ash burnt up from the furnace of Nimrod, and I should be dust, having been returned to the earth in the battle of the four kings and the five kings, in which Avram himself, remember, the four kings were superior to the five kings, and they conquered them, and Avram fought all of them, even though they were so powerful, to have defeated the five kings, to rescue his nephew Lot. So he says, I should have been dust, meaning I should have been killed in battle and returned to the dust of the earth. I should have been ash, I should have been burnt in the fiery furnace of Nimrod. So I am but a nobody before you, nothing but dust and ash, afar v'afer, in your presence. And yet, from that place of humility, I have no choice other than to open up my mouth and beseech before you to spare the cities. How did he attempt to do that? That you'd be lacking only five people, and if at 45, you can't destroy a whole city, a whole series of cities, just because of five people, says Rashi. What does the 45 represent? Would you destroy the entire city because of the five? Are there not nine for each city? Ve'ata, and you, Tzadiko Shel Olam, the righteous one of the world, Titztaref Imohem, you will join the nine, and that will create 10 for each city. Says Rashi, what is the, remember the order was 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10? So he said, it's a funny set. And I give that to a kid in school and say, how does this set work? And they'll say, it doesn't. There's no pattern there. 50, 45, 40, 30, 10, 20, 10. What's the pattern, says Rashi? Because 9 is a unique number. 9 I could combine with God Himself. So 50 I didn't have. But if I go down to 45, I'm now at 9 per city, because again, Rashi's approach is we're dealing with 5 separate cities. Each one needs to have a minion. So I can't have 10. Maybe I have 9. If I have 9, and I add you, then we can spare the whole city. Now this is an idea which has made its way throughout just general Jewish life. The idea that if you're lacking a minion, so you take, you know, a Sefer Torah, or you'll say that. It comes from, it's rooted in Avram's argument that there's an idea of adding God's presence, so to speak, to 9 righteous individuals. We don't use it halachically in the sense of making a minion, but Avram used it in the sense of the merit to spare the city. 9 righteous people plus you should be sufficient merit to spare the entire city. Therefore, he goes down to 45, and Hashem says, you got it. If we can find 9 righteous people in the city, in each city, for a grand total of 45, I will spare all of the cities. However, Avram, yes?
Well, he goes down one more person on each city.
Right, well, he does more than that.
Okay.
Now, there are 2 ways to go. When he goes down to 40... there are 2 ways to think about that. One would be the way that you just, Loretta just said. We could either view it as, I'm now at 8 per city, which would mean one of 2 things. Either the merit of 8 would somehow be enough, even though it wasn't enough at 10 and it wasn't enough at 9, I still needed a whole minion or God's presence. So either he's making an argument that we should make an exception and allow 8 to be sufficient, or I have another option. What's that?
4 cities.
Right, I'm dropping a city. Because if Avram's minimum that he felt was 50, that means he really felt he needed a minion per city. And with less, another, why didn't he start with 10 and say, it's one big metropolis. If I have 10 righteous people and everything, let's just save the whole place. He didn't think that was going to work. He needed a minion per city. He didn't find it. So he says, well, I still need a minion per city. So he went down to 9. How's he going to get his minion with only 9 per city? He's going to combine God to the equation. So he's really still dealing with a minion. Now that he goes down to 40, well, how do we address that? What is he doing? Is he going down to 8? Did he drop his idea of a minion? So we'll see in Rashi, he's not going to drop the idea of a minion, because for whatever reason, Avram's and the Masorah's tradition is, I need the merit of a minion of righteous. And therefore, when he goes down to 40, the only other option is what he did is, he really dropped the city and said, okay, forget that city, but maybe out of everyone else, if I combine them, I can come up with 40. Yeah.
I just don't remember. Was a minion of 10, you know, the whole requirement established before this, or is this where...
So we don't really have such a source, because remember at this point the only Jew we have is Avraham. He has no children, and there is nobody else. So certainly the concept of a minion has not yet been really created. But what I mean to say is that when I say that we can understand that as a minion, meaning we understand there's a spiritual significance to a minion.
So, I mean, they don't get it from here. Or...
Maybe they. No, no, no. So whether or not it was, this clearly would be the, one of the original sources for that. That something is different about 10 as opposed to less than 10. And Avram is not willing to go less than that. He's not willing. Let's see in Rashi. We're going to see is not willing to say that Avram made an argument of only 8 per city, because there's no significance to having 8 righteous in the city. They would not possibly have the merit to spare the whole city. Therefore, the only way that Avram could be arguing, Rashi argues, is he dropped the city and said, maybe I can find a total of 40 and we could at least spare 4 of the cities. Let's take a look at that inside. Verse 29, let's read the verse still up on the top. He further continued to speak to him and he said, perhaps 40 would be found there. Now here there was no introductory comment. There's no humility of dust and ash. There's no hagosha. There's no, and he approached it. Just simply, he continued to speak. And what does he argue? Perhaps 40 would be found there. And he said, I will not act on account of the 40. Hashem responds and says, agreed. If we can find the 40, I will not act, says Rashi in the bottom of page 190. Ulai, maybe, perhaps 40 would be found there. The Yimaltu Arbo'o HaKrochim, and then 4 cities would escape destruction. Continues Rashi, similarly, 30 righteous people would save 3 of them, or 20 would save 2, or 10 would save 1 of them. So how does Rashi again understand our progression of the numbers game from 50 to 45 to 40 to 30 to 20 to 10? If you're wondering why I keep stressing this, because the Ramban is going to say, I don't think this is what's going on. He's going to have a different approach. And Rashi's approach was to 50, the minion. Why 50? If you only need a minion, it's 10. 5 cities, each one needs its own minion. Rashi understands that Avram is willing to drop to 45, even though it's only 9, because you can combine God together to form the minion of merit. Then when you start going down to 40, it's not 8. We're now eliminating cities. So we now went down to 40. If I could find 40 people, somehow I'll be able to find 40 in the whole 5 city area and spare 4 of the cities from that. Maybe I can find 30 in the whole area and in their merit save 3 of the cities. Then I go down to 20 and then down to 10. Once we hit 10, at that point, there's nothing left to be done. If you don't have your 10 people, then he's not going to be able to move forward. There's technically one other question that Avram could have asked, and that would have been?
Why not 9?
Excellent. Right, once he gets down to 10, and we don't find 10 people out of all of the 5 city metropolis to at least spare 1 city, so then Avram should have asked one final question of 9. Because if he was willing to go to 45, that meant 9 plus God would work. We will see in the Ramban. The Ramban will address it. I will mention it to you now because the Ramban is addressing it on behalf of Rashi. The Ramban says, once Avram asked that once, and we see that God accepted it, meaning Avram asked for 45, which includes God, and God said yes, says the Ramban, that you can assume that Avram asked that at every stage of the way, because it was a winning argument that, yes, I will combine myself and my presence to the 9, just that you don't have it. So the Ramban says it's not stated, but once Avram made the argument of 45, then he made that argument at every stage of the way, of to create the minion, I can add your presence to it, and it just wasn't there. Let's take a look at this. Let's just finish up one more Rashi. So going back to the verses, let's just read it through, starting on the top of the page, verse 30. And he said, let my Lord not be annoyed, and I will speak. Perhaps 30 would not be found there. He said, I will not act if I find there 30. So Avram drops down from 40 down to 30. Hashem agrees to that as well. And he says, indeed, if we can find the 30, I will not. But apparently they were not 30. So he said, behold, now I desire to speak to my Lord. Perhaps 20 would not be found there. And he said, I will not destroy an account of the 20. So he said, not my Lord, be annoyed, and I will speak but this once. Perhaps 10 would be found there. And he said, I will not destroy an account of the 10. Let's take a look at Rashi. 32. Perhaps 10 would be found there. For less than 10, he did not seek God's mercy. Because he said, the survivors of the generation of the flood were 8. Noah and his sons, Unasheim and their wives, and they could not save their generation. So at 8, I know, did not help for more, because 8 were able to save themselves, but God does not spare the generation on behalf of the 8. Noah and his 3 sons, Noah's wife, Mrs. Noah, 3 daughters-in-law, you have a total of 8, and that didn't work. So he doesn't go down to 8. We ask, what's the magic number of a minion? So minion, yeah. But 8, I see, doesn't work. 9 works together with God. So concludes Rashi. And for 10, through joining with God in order to arrive at a total of 10, he had already sought but did not find, meaning he did not succeed.
Is this supposed to be the third way? Is this supposed to be prayer?
So, I don't know how to answer that question. In other words, Rashi points out that what Avram does is really 3 elements. It's preparing for war, it's prayer, and it's conciliation. I don't know how to break down each individual phrase. I'm not sure if it's in the phrases of, I'm imploring you, I'm but ash and but dust, I don't want you to be annoyed. I'm not sure if like that's the part of the prayer, the part of the war being, it would not be right for the judge of the whole world to do injustice. And whether or not the part of the conciliation is, maybe we'll find this, maybe we'll find... I'm not sure how to break down that Rashi into the different phrases that Avram actually says in terms of which parts are going to be which. That I'm not sure about. But what is interesting to me is that we have the word Vayigash, and he approached 3 times. Yehuda uses it in conciliation with his brother. Eliyahu uses it as far as prayer. And in Tanakh we find it, Yoav in terms of war. But Rashi, based on the sages, did not see Avraham as like a fourth type, but instead he sees Avraham as a combination of all the other 3. So that Avraham, which came first, he's the first usage of Vayigash, instead of the Rashi and the sages seeing in that, I don't know, humility, something else. Rashi actually sees it as a combination of the other 3 times where it's used. Where in these words does he see all 3? I don't know. That's my guess, is what I gave you. You know, certain phrases are more prayer-based, certain phrases are more war-based, certain phrases are more conciliatory-based. But that is how Rashi saw it.
And when you beg, you're praying.
It also reminds me of when Yaakov approached Esau, but when Yaakov was coming back.
Yeah, I just don't think it used. I don't think the Chumash uses that word.
Okay.
And then that is the conclusion. The verse then concludes, which you don't have on your sheet here, but Vayelech Hashem. When Hashem then departed, when Avram had completed speaking before him, Rashi says, once the advocate becomes silent, the judge departs. In other words, there are no more arguments to make. Avram made every argument that he could. He made the argument of the righteous should not be swept up together with the wicked. Not only that, the righteous should actually be able to spare the entirety of the city. In order for the righteous to be able to do that, they would need a certain amount of merit. It's the merit of a minion of people. 1 minion per city. He's willing to go down to 9 per city. Once he doesn't have that, he's not willing to go down to 8, because as Rashi says, he already sees from the generation of the flood, 8 is not sufficient to spare others. So that when he then goes down to 40, in Rashi's mind, it can't mean 8 per city, because we already know that that doesn't work. The 8 must mean starting to drop cities, and therefore the argument of Avram is not a smooth parallel argument. It starts off with 50, 10 per city, it goes to 9 per city, and then it goes down to just 4 cities, 3 cities, 2 cities, 1 city. I don't have enough to make it, and then Avraham leaves, Hashem leaves, and then we're going to go on to the destruction of Sodom. That's how Rashi reads this story. That Hashem internally decides to tell Avraham, because he's their father, it's his land, he's going to be a great nation, I must tell him, it would be inappropriate for me not to tell my beloved one Avraham, who's going to teach his children to walk in my ways. Avraham's argument is you can't destroy the wicked, they're righteous, and maybe the righteous should spare the wicked, but he can't come up with the numbers necessary, not even for one city, and therefore they both part ways and the destruction takes place. That's how Rashi sees this story. Next week, or the next 2 weeks, we'll do the Ramban, and then probably after the summer we'll do Refersh, and then we'll start a new topic after the Yom Tov.
He sees it differently.
Who sees it differently?
Ramban.
Yeah, Ramban sees it differently. Yeah, so we'll take a look at the Ramban. We'll have the sheets. So we're going to meet next week, even though the Rebbe is not going to be here. We'll meet next week.
Although, who's not going to be here?
I keep wondering why righteous people were going to live in a place like that.
Right, which is a good question. Right, that was a complaint against Lot. Why are you even attempting to live in such a place if he ran after the money? It's all about the money.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.